Hello and welcome to a boxing special brought to you by the V2 Sport Network. I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and joining me is former host of the boxing podcast we used to do, Adam Davey.
Nice to be here, dusting down the old microphone. The chair's still in the right position. That's good.
Nice to have you back on the V2 Sport Network.
It's great to be back. Really, really, really excited about tonight.
Yeah. So am I, actually. I, to be honest with you, I didn't know we had a boxing podcast. It was sort of I've not had any involvement in it, and it's good to be doing a special tonight, and I guess see how this goes, and if the listeners like it, then I'm sure we can do more in the future. Perhaps we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it's good to get you on the show.
Excellent.
So primarily tonight we're going to be discussing the Fury Wilder fight and what it means for the future of the heavyweight division, and also Anthony Joshua, who we think he might fight next. As well as that, we've got a treat for you. As on the boxing podcast we used to do, there were various interviews done, and who interviewed Tyson Fury. Great interview, and we'll be playing that in the second half of the show.
It was actually quite interesting because at the time when we did that, I think we just interviewed Wilder a few weeks before as well, but it was during the build up to one of the David Haye fights that got cancelled, but he was talking about fighting Wilder during that interview, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so stay tuned, and that'll be up in the second part of the show. It's approximately half an hour long, and yeah, well worth a listen. So yeah, the Fury Wilder fight, where to begin? There's so many talking points. Do you think that the draw was the correct result, or do you agree with some of Fury's comments since that he should have won the fight?
I'm not going to hide the fact at all. You know, I've always been a Fury fan. You know, and I know a lot of people have come round, certainly more recently. You know, some of them went over when he beat Vladimir. But, you know, I've always been a Fury fan for his antics and just the kind of guy he is, you know, approachable. And I think likable, even though he says some quite despicable things at times, but which boxer doesn't. The thing about him, though, is that I've never felt he was a malicious person, unlike David Haye, who I just think is maybe not a very nice person. So bearing that all in mind, I still think Fury won that fight. I really do think he won that fight. And it's no surprise that it's been manufactured to be a draw so that they can get another one out of it. It's not a surprise, but I think anyone who knows anything about boxing knows that was, at the very worst case, a draw. Mm. And no way did Wilder win it. How that one judge got Wilder up so far, God only knows.
That was what I was going to say. I mean, because it's one judge's scoring of 115-111, I think it was a 4-point victory to Wilder, according to him, and it just makes you wonder what planet that judge was on. I think he was Mexican, wasn't he?
His name was Alejandro, something like that. Yeah. Roshan. And I've got the scorecard in front of me, and maybe we could put a link to it on the article, but he gave the first four rounds to Wilder. You know, I think most people who watched it, you know, said, okay, maybe you could pick one or two of the first few rounds that could have gone either way. But the first four was ridiculous. Funny enough, all three judges marked the first round to Wilder.
Mm. So perhaps there is some sort of consistency. I did see a comment on the forum about whether the judging, well, there was quite a few comments about whether the judging should be changed, and I know one post said, why don't they do it like they do in skating and stuff, where there's several judges, and diving as well, where you have, like, say, seven judges or something, and those who give the most extreme results, their scores are discarded. Do you think that the scoring system in general is okay, or do you think that boxing needs to reform and change?
I think there does need to be some transparency, and I remember it was way back when I was doing the podcast. So I mean, we're going back, you know, a good 3-4 years. There was one promotion, and I can't remember which one it was, but they used to actually say, you know, halfway through the fight, who's winning, kind of thing, you know, and say where they were on the scorecards, and I think that would help a little bit. Now, I don't know what it would have done on the match the other night, just because of the fact, you know, if Wilder thought he was ahead, maybe he would have gone for that knockout, and then it would have been an even more disgusting result, you know. So, but I do like the idea that that possibly, you know, there could be some transparency in it so that they could let the person in the corner know that if you're going to get screwed, then at least try and go for a knockout to try and turn it around.
Yeah, I do wonder whether mentally for, you know, some of them boxers that are really being fired up, you do wonder how different the fights would be. You know, staying in control of your emotion, if you say in Tyson Fury's shoes, if he got told that a judge had put him four rounds down to Wilder, how furious he'd be. But yeah, I think he mentioned Lennox Lewis and how hard it is for, you know, a foreigner to go over to America, a British person to go over to America and win a fight on points. That's surely a factor at play here.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And the one thing I was still amazed about today is that Fury beat Klitschko in, well, I think it was in somewhere in Germany, wasn't
Dusseldorf.
It? I'm still amazed that he won that fight, clearly on the cards. You know, that's another fight that you could have argued that if they wanted to rig it, they could have. And I would have seen more of an argument for that being a draw than the one we saw the other night. I think the only thing that Wilder had going for him was that he did have two knockdowns, and certainly the second knockdown in the final round, it was a brutal, it was a hard knockdown, as opposed to the first one where it didn't really look Tyson was in trouble.
Were you impressed by Wilder? Because a lot of people was sort of commenting Fury, especially saying that his boxing ability is very limited, but you know, he got a couple of big knockdowns, and he showed, I guess, a British audience who perhaps haven't seen as much of him what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a fight a couple of years ago where it was one of his first defences where he fought behind the jab, and Wilder is actually was probably a better boxer than people give him credit for. Having said that, he didn't show any of that the other night. I mean, he was swinging wildly and missing. But the one thing that he does do is carries power until the 12th round, so he's obviously a very fit guy. Now, drawing parallels between that fight the other night and also the Klitschko fight that Fury won, obviously, in the 12th round, he got caught by Klitschko in the 12th round as well. And I thought he was going to go down in that fight. So it looks possibly that Fury has got not a conditioning problem, because obviously he's not a Calvin Klein model, let's face it. But maybe he does tire and get a bit careless at the tail end of a fight. But fair play to Wilder, he kept on going and he still carries that power in the 12th round.
Mm-hmm. And looking at Fury, I mean, how did he get up in that last round? He looked to it like it was all over. I know there was a question about whether the count was too long. I'm not really convinced by that argument myself. But you know, to get up in that position was incredible. You know, you see his head hit the canvas and no one's home.
Well, yeah, I mean, the count thing, by the way, I don't agree with it either, because I believe it's not a 10-second count, it's a 10 count. However, the ref wants to do it, he wants to do it as slow as he can. But the point being is that Fury got up to the 10 count. Mm. You know, whether the ref counted it right is another matter, but Fury was only going to the ref, you know, what he was counting. It reminded me of, not the count, no, sorry, the actual knockdown and him getting up was against Steve Cunningham. And I don't know if you remember this fight. I think it was Fury's first fight in America. God, I sound like an expert on Fury, don't I? His first fight in America, where he got caught, I think it was in the second or third round, by, you know, a big overwrite by Steve Cunningham, who was a pumped-up cruiserweight. And Tyson went down. But he got caught clean. But his head clears so quickly. Mm. And I thought he was completely out the other night. But he instantly got back to his feet and got back up. And I read, you know, some of the comments he made about things, and he said, you know, when he got up, he said he didn't know what his legs were going to feel like, whether they're going to be jelly, whether they're gone or not. But, you know, even after that knockdown, I thought Fury came back strong in that round, you know, and looked the better fighter after the knockdown. So Fury's one tough guy, and people questioned his chin for years. People have questioned Wilder's chin for years, but Fury, he doesn't know when to quit, and that's, he's got, he always talks about heart, and I don't know anyone who's got more heart in that ring.
I thought it was, looking at the referee, I thought it was good refereeing, to be honest. I mean, it was a 10 count. I mean, there's a timekeeper on the side who times it properly and has the 1, 2, 3, and then the ref picks it up from there and did so. But then, you know, telling them to go to the, walks the canvas and back, and making sure he could see a defence. And yeah, Fury was perfectly capable of defending himself, and in my view, he tried to Wilder stopped going for the KO because Fury came back at him toward the end.
Just looking at the ref, by the way, to comment on it, I believe both fighters said that he was a very, very good ref. Mm. And I've seen some good fights ruined by refs who are constantly breaking people up or getting involved, and he just kept the action going. It was very good, very good reffing.
Although, to be fair, there wasn't much sort of grappling going on in the fight. It was always... I was expecting it to be more like that with Fury. I thought there'd be more holding and stuff, but it wasn't. It was a very clean fight.
It was unusual because, I mean, I think a lot of people were thinking, you know, the commentators beforehand were thinking that Fury's going to lean on Wilder, you know, try and box him on the inside and lean on the ropes and try and tire him out. And it wasn't really. It was just a jab, not a jabbing masterclass, but, you know, just hitting from distance, really, wasn't it?
It was. But Fury coming back anyway, looking at his performance, did it surprise you that he's managed to come back and do so well? Because his previous two fights were two against Seferi and Pianetta were not really very serious fights, I think it would be fair to say.
Yeah, well, it did surprise me, and it's funny, you know, I said at the beginning of the show that, you know, I'm a huge Fury fan, and people are asking me at work, you know, that they've heard some of my interviews in the past, and they're asking me at work saying, you know, who do I think is going to win? And I'm usually quite good on these things, and, you know, I predicted Fury was going to do something against Klitschko, and I know that seems like, you know, revisionist booking, but it's true, I did honestly think he was going to do something. This time, I was really fearful for him in this fight. I just couldn't see him doing it. As he got closer to the fight there, I was coming around a bit, but it just shows that the guy, he just, you know, I think he's stubborn. You know, I said about he's got a fighter's heart. I think he's stubborn, and he just wants to prove people wrong. And he was immense. And I think, I don't know if Wilder took him too lightly or if just his boxing ability just made Wilder look silly in the ring. Very impressive, very impressive. And even though he hasn't got the belt, I think that Fury's stock is as high as it was after he won the belts.
And where do you see what do you see Fury's next fight being? Do you think it'll be him going against a rematch with Wilder, or?
I hope so. I really hope so, because you know, if we're talking about the top three guys in the division, the top three are undoubtedly the two in the ring the other night and Anthony Joshua. Now, thinking about the three possible matchups, I think Fury can beat Wilder. I think Wilder would beat AJ, and I think AJ would beat Fury. So, but, you know, it's strange, but just Joshua's there to be hit. He's not as mobile or, you know, moves as much as someone like Tyson Fury, which is why I think Wilder would beat him. And I think Tyson Fury would struggle against AJ just because he hasn't got the power to keep him off. But I think that Wilder has got that power to be able to take out Joshua. So I think the smart match for Fury would be another Wilder rematch. And I hope that's where it goes, because let's face it, Eddie Hearn has been good for boxing in some ways, but at the same time, he's been protecting Joshua, you know, and if they wanted to have made that Wilder fight, they could have made that Wilder fight beforehand. And, you know, I think after this one, they're now keen to do it because, you know, he's still got the belt, but, you know, he's been seen to be not that great in the ring. So I think now they're entertaining it, but I doubt very much Eddie Hearn will make the fight. It's a Rocky III situation, Anthony. Honestly, it is. And Eddie Hearn is Mickey, you know, where he's protecting him against Clubber Lang. And I really feel that that's what he's doing with Anthony Joshua. He's coming out with all these things about, yeah, we've got a contract on the table, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it will happen against Wilder. It might happen against Fury.
You don't think that it's the other way, and that the contract's been offered and they've done what they can, and, you know, the narrative which they argue is that they've done all they can and it's Wilder and his team who are being the difficult ones. I think the location of the fight seems to be the potential Wilder-Joshua fight seemed to be the biggest sticking point and why that didn't happen last year.
I mean, ultimately, AJ's got three of the belts and Wilder's got, I would say, some would maybe consider the best of the four belts anyway. Mm. But, you know, I would say at the moment the true champion is most probably AJ because he holds the three belts, represents three divisions. But I personally believe it's Eddie Hearn who wants no part of this fight. I honestly think that.
Okay.
And just because AJ's shortcomings, I think, are visible to the majority of boxing fans, in that, yeah, he's a bodybuilder who can bang, but he's not a fantastic boxer. You know, he's someone with power who's intimidating, but, you know, he doesn't move in the way that Fury moves.
Mm.
So I think Eddie Hearn is protecting his cash cow for as long as possible, just exactly the same way that Warren did for many years with his fighters and you know, they did with Eubank all those years ago. So I think we're more likely to see a Wilder Fury fight than we are to see a Wilder Joshua fight.
Yeah.
But Fury's the wild card in this. I think Fury's the one who can decide. I think Fury's he could choose either fighter right now. And I think he'll go for Wilder again.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully get that fight in the UK at Wembley or at Manchester or somewhere like that, or even Cardiff, if Wilder fancies that.
Yeah, well, I know Wilder has fought in, I think he's fought in Cardiff before. Did he take out Audie Harrison in Cardiff? I can't remember. But I don't think Wilder has any desire to come over to the UK. And the reason being is that I think he'll feel that he'll get on the wrong end of a scoring decision if he's over in the UK. Because for all the faults of that result the other night, it's not a systematic thing of being in America or being in Germany. It's just as I've seen just as bad results in the UK, to be honest. You know, it's just boxing in general.
And looking at the other way, Anthony Joshua, he's got a few options on the table. I mean, he fought Povetkin before. Who was his mandatory, and with all the talk about Wilder not happening, do you think there's potential for him maybe to get called out a bit, you know, for ducking the biggest fights? Do you think that narrative has any could have any weight to it?
Oh yeah, absolutely, and I think that Tyson Fury has done himself the world of good with this fight. You know, the publicity, the whole story of him coming back from mental illness, from a drugs ban, you know, and also the publicity of he's donating his purse to the homeless in Manchester. Whether that happens or not is another story. I'd like to think it does, and let's face it, Fury could give it away because he knows he could make exactly the same in 6 months' time anyway. So, you know, I think that, you know, he calls himself the people champ, and I think he is now. Whereas I think that, you know, Joshua, he will be seen as someone who's avoided these top fighters if it doesn't happen. But where Joshua goes next, what do you think? Where do you think his next fight is?
Assuming he wins, I think Dylan White is the next one. But he's in a difficult position. I'd like Alexander Usyk, who beat Bellew about, what was that, last month now. That'd be a fight. I'd be interested to see if he could make the step up to heavyweight, because he's a very good boxer, and I think, you know, he's quite a big cruiserweight, so he could make the step up. So Dylan White, I think, is the obvious choice, but Joshua's beat him before, so it feels a bit, it doesn't feel right to me.
I think that White is a fighter who's ready made for Joshua, because he's another one who doesn't have very good movement and just stands there and gets hit. So he's ready made for someone like Anthony Joshua. Having said that, I do think that he's improved. I mean, I'm just looking at some of the rankings now, and to be honest with you, that I can't really see anyone else out there that I could face him. You mentioned about Usyk there, and I think that's maybe a good pick, mainly because they can sell it as the conqueror of Tony Bellew, who was the conqueror of David Haye, you know, so that they could make that fight. And I think it's one that most probably Joshua would win, just from a size advantage, if nothing else. I know he's a big cruiserweight, but at the same time, I think that that's a fight that Joshua would most probably take on.
Well, looking at the Usyk-Bellew fight, it probably suited them both, because Bellew got that one last big payday and a shot at the belts. And Usyk did say at the time that part of his thinking with the Bellew fight was to potentially get a shot at Anthony Joshua. So it's all worked out, I think, for him in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like that's the way it's going to go. And I've no doubt in my mind that Eddie Hearn sees it as something that he can sell on pay-per-view. You know, and oh. And let's face it, that's all Eddie Hearn's worried about these days is making as much money from Joshua as possible. So I mean, you look at the rankings, and you got Pulev, you know, top of one of the rankings, and you got, you know, White, Ortiz, Fury, Brazil. I mean, we're not going to have another Brazil match. That was terrible.
Yeah.
You didn't know, Parker.
Didn't Pulev win a shot at the mandatory with he beat Huey Fury a couple of weeks ago, so Pulev's I think he's probably going to be one of his mandatory challengers next year.
I think you're right, and you know it could be the way it goes, but once again, you know, Pulev's not that great.
No, Anthony Joshua would destroy him. Like,
yeah, the same as Huey Fury. That's another one who, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if that happened out of the blue.
Yeah.
You know, as a voluntary, you know, get Huey and then he can say, oh yeah, face your cousin before I faced you, you know. So you know, there's a lot of options for Joshua, but none of them excite me other than a Wilder or Fury fight.
Mm-hmm. It's whether it excites a lot of the public, and I think Anthony Joshua's kind of in that position because it's not just boxing fans, a lot of casuals, a bit like you think of Ronnie O'Sullivan and snooker or something like that. I think he's got a lot of casuals in, and a lot of people will go and watch just because it's a Joshua fight. I think, you know, he can sort of get away with that. It would sell okay. Like the Povetkin fight sold a decent amount.
Yeah, the thing about the British public is that, you know, when Eddie Hearn's got the Sky publicity machine behind him, you know, they can make anything look like a real threat to Joshua. And, you know, it's just the same as they used to do with Eubank, etc. So you're quite right. They could make a White fight easily. They could, you know, they could build up the Usyk one. There's a lot of stuff that they could do there. So I don't think we're going to be seeing... I think it'll be Wilder Fury again, and then maybe at the tail end, this time next year, you might see Joshua face one of them.
Mm. But that's the thing, it puts Joshua in a weak position if it's, you know, if it gets to, you know, toward the end of next year and he's still not fought anyone. You know, you could argue any top draw boxers since the Klitschko fight, and that was a while ago now. I mean, you know, it's a long time not to have fought another true champion, I suppose you could argue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the Povetkin fight was a good fight for him, to be fair. You know, that was a reasonable quality opponent. But, you know, other than that, I think the only one out there is the winner of White Chisora.
Yeah.
And if you're saying that is the match, you know, the winner of it, then you kind of hope White wins it. Mm. So I saw Chisora recently on a TV program. I can't remember. I think it was on a Channel 5 boxing program. I think it might be the Huey Fury fight. That he was on there with David Hay, who's now his promoter, and Chisora just looked nuts. I mean, he looked crazy.
Mm. Yeah, he was. He was one of the pundits, wasn't he, for that fight? You're right.
Do you remember he wore his sunglasses, and he was just odd all the way through the fight, like he'd taken a few too many to the head. And he looked bigger than usual as well. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that White Chisora fight. And to be fair to Deneric, he deserves a rematch because the first one was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
First match was very, very good.
You mentioned in passing about the Sky publicity machine and that. Do you think there was any effect of that BT have the Tyson Fury fights? Do you think that matters at all, or do you not see it as any issue?
Obviously, well, I don't know if it went to purse bids or whatever, but you know, Frank Warren obviously had his own station, Box Nation. I think it's still going, but you know, he's anti Hearn, isn't he? He hates Eddie Hearn, which, fair play, if you're in competition, neither of them, I'm sure, have much good to say about each other. And I think it most probably was a protest against Sky by going to BT. Now, I don't even know what the contract negotiations are. I don't know if Sky are allowed to show anything over the Matchroom anymore. There might be an exclusive contract or something like that, which could have had an effect as well. I'm not quite sure of the situation now.
Just before Christmas is White Chisora, do you have any sort of...
Yeah, I think that White's likely to win it. You know, White has got better. And another thing about White is that he's not afraid. And Chisora... he does tend to lead of his chin, and I just think this time round White will have his measure, I do think what has been improving since that first Joshua fight, whereas I think Chisora's reached his level. He's never going to get any better. I'm surprised he's still at the level he's at, to be honest. I know he hasn't had that many fights, but he's lost a lot of fights. So I think, you know, that's got white Britain all over it. Just interestingly, on that undercard, you've also got David Price fighting as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jingis, has he got anything left, do you think?
I saw Povetkin knock him out. That was in the undercard of a Joshua fight, I think. And then I saw him lose again after that. So I'm not so sure, to be honest. I don't know the calibre of the opponent he's playing, but he's fighting. But I don't see him as a serious, anything serious, personally.
No, but you know, he's another one that they could you know, build up to have a grudge match, you know, with the Sky Pepsi machine. I was actually very surprised that Price never fought Fury in his comeback. You know, I'd have thought that would have been someone made for Fury, you know, with the grudge beforehand. And let's face it, if he ever wins a title back, you know, that's something that you might see.
Mm-hmm. I think, it was surprising, wasn't it, going back to that, but because a lot of people thought Fury might fight Bellew or someone like that as well, but it was just, you know, two joke fights and then straight into it, straight into a huge fight. And, well, I think the bottom line of all of this is it's done both of them, it's given both of them, you could argue, the upper hand in any negotiations with Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? You know, I think that Joshua, despite holding the belts, he's the one on the outside now looking for the big fight, whereas these two, if I was them, I would book it as soon as possible, book it 3-4 months' time, do it all over again.
For the second part of this show, we've got our classic interview with Tyson Fury, and yeah, you can listen to that now.
I'm your host, Adam Davey, and as always, I'm joined by Paul Hampton. Good evening, Paul.
Good evening, Adam. How are you?
Yeah, really good. And more important than Paul, my co-host, we've got our guest on this evening, Tyson Fury. Good evening, Tyson.
Good evening, guys. How are we?
Yeah, excellent, thanks. This is a real international episode of the Boxing Podcast. I'm over in Spain. Paul's in North Wales. And where are you this evening, Tyson?
Me? I'm in Belgium. Essen, in Belgium.
So is that where you are most of the time there, when you're not fighting?
No, I was in Cannes, south of France, only a week ago, and I've come back here to start training camp.
Ah, so that leads us on. If you've got a training camp, what's the latest on the question I'm sure everyone wants to know the answer to?
And what question would that be?
Mr. Hay, what's the latest on that? Is there anything penned in ink yet, or is it still 99% of the way there?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, really. They say it's 99% of the way there, but it's not on until it's on, is it really? I'm not even getting excited about the fight until it's signed, and we're both like getting up for the fight because, you know, many fights have fell through, and it was only last week where it was on its knees, this fight, and it was supposed to be 99% done then, so anything can go wrong.
Do you think it will happen, Tyson?
I think it's too big of a not to happen. And for both of us to take the point, a fight that could generate as much publicity as this fight's going to do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the build-up so far has been quite entertaining. And it's one of the questions I want to ask you, actually. One of the things that both you said, and I think David said, was that you wanted 80% of the purse. Now, was that true, or was that you just, playing the internet as usual?
You know, I was just winding them up. I was just winding everybody up as usual. And I knew it'd get people talking, so that's why I said it.
Sure, so I take it, what's the hold-up with it then? I mean, what's the biggest thing that's, you know, getting it to that final signing on the dotted line?
The percentages have been agreed. It's a 50-50 fight down the line. The hold-up's been, David A went away and he said, sack it, you're taking too long. If you want it, it's now a 60-40. But it was a mix-up in the middle between lawyers. It was nothing to do with me or him, really. So I've been told the lawyers just wasn't communicating too cleverly, and they held it up. So what the actual thing was, they wasn't going to take this fight because they were saying, "Oh, we want to walk in second. We want to be announced second. We want the changing room choice. We want the glove choice." and all this type of stuff. And at the beginning, in the first contract that was made, we was going to spin a coin for everything. But you know what it is? I just want to make the fight. I don't care if I have to warm up across the road and walk in and fight with whatever gloves on. I'm not really too interested in all that rubbish. And the walking in second, let him have it. He's been a former world champion, which is more than I've achieved up to date. So, you know, I fought former world champions in the past. But, you know, let him have it. If that's what he desperately wants, then he can have it. I'm not really too bothered. It'll be his last walk of glory anyway. So, you know, I'm one of many for me.
Sure, so, yeah.
To let him have the second. I've agreed to let him have all everything his own way. Whatever he wants, he can have. If he wants me to tie me up, I'll tie it behind me back. Just, you know, just to make this fight happen, I'll do whatever it takes.
Sure. So, I mean, obviously you said it was in the hands of lawyers. So should we expect by the end of the week, the end of next week, that something will come out? Or is it just all in David's court now?
I hope it should be signed and done by the end of the week.
Excellent. So that's something that the fight fans can look forward to. And there was a tentative date that's been rumoured around the internet. I don't know, you can't say until it's done and dusted, but is it looking like the end of September at Wembley?
So I don't really know much about it, to be honest. All I know is that we're still negotiating on the thing like the 20th of September. I keep reading this and people keep it's some truth in them. And all be just amazing.
Sure. So, that would be pretty amazing. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of people out there. And I've got to say that the way the banter's gone on over Twitter and things like that with you and David, it's been highly entertaining. And I think you've really got yourself now to be most probably the most Marmite fighter out there, more so than anyone else. That people either love you or hate you. And I think it's a really ingenious way that you reinvented yourself. So you've said a lot as well about a few other fighters recently. The one that I know Paul was dying to ask you, and I'm going to steal his thunder here, is about Lennox Lewis. How's that all come about?
Thank you, Dodge. You know, when he says, oh, I've got a mouth and whatever, and I'm chinny and whatever. Well, Lennox Lewis to speak, because when he was in my stage of his career, he was gobbing off as well. He was a loud mouth. People didn't like him because he was so arrogant, but it didn't change him. It was all right for him to do it, but not me. People can say, oh, you've never achieved nothing compared to Lennox Lewis, but Lennox Lewis didn't turn pro till he was 24. I'm 24 and I'm 21-0, so I've achieved a lot on my stage of my from the age, and you know, it's all there for me, and I'm just coming to that stage now, so people can't judge me at all until I've either get knocked out or I'm finished at the end of my career. So that's how it's come about, really.
Do you think?
And in case I'm a mouse and I'd never challenge him to his face, and who am I again? But I'm such of a nobody that he keeps talking about me and keeps firing these stupid little statements across. And why would I want to challenge a dear old man? I has been champion. I've got no interest in fighting Grandad, so leave that to David Price.
Well, funny enough, I was going to say, do you think that that's part of the reason why Lewis has done this? Because obviously he's been training.
Yeah, all he's trying to do, Lennox Lewis, you've got to give him credit where credit is due. He's trying to build the fight between me and Price again, knowing that if Price beats Thompson, then it can start being built up again between me and him, when he's got Lennox Lewis and there's a rivalry going on between me and him. Now he's starting it all off again, you know, but I've no interest in thinking about anything other than getting this day-to-day fight done. I'm no interested in Lennox Lewis or his stupid comments or anything he's got to say, really. I've no interest.
Okay, so one of the questions that, once again, our readers have been asking us to ask yourself is with regards to, you know, you're in a position to make yourself a mandatory to the Klitschkos by fighting Prilliev. Is the reason why you jumped out of that fight because the David Haye fight was bigger and on the cards?
Yeah, the reason I pulled out of the pool situation is because there's no money involved. I'm going to talk straight with you. I'm not here to talk bull something. I was going to say something then, but I'm trying to stop swearing. I'm trying to stop. I'm cleaning the act up here. I swore 9 times yesterday, and I was cautious about it. Today I'm on number. I've swore 5 times, so I'm trying to cut it out. I don't like swearing, and I do it a lot lately. But what was we just talking about there, the Pulev situation? Yeah, there's no money in the Pulev fight for me. and it's a risk. You know, he's undefeated, he's a good fighter, he's a European champion. So why would I take a fight of that calibre for no money? You know, I've got to pay bills, I've got things to do. And it's a big risk for no reward. And there's no fight out there that's going to generate more money than me fighting David E. So I've got to look at the financial situation as my future. But you know what it is? It can be one of them things that if I had a fought Pulev, I can guarantee I can beat Pulev, and then I can fight Klitschko. So that's two fights. But them two fights put together wouldn't have been as big as me fighting he, for me anyway. So there's not a fight there that's going to, like I said before, there's not a fight out there that's going to be as big as me and David E in financial situation for me. Not even both Klitschko's put together as a mandatory. So that's what it's about, really.
I understand. Now, just to clarify on that, obviously the Prilev fight would have been a eliminator. Do you think this fight is likely to put you as a mandatory for one of the belts by beating David?
Do you know the belts? I'm just gonna say something totally crazy here now, yeah. And it might get me in trouble, and it might not. Right, but really, quite frankly, I don't really care. But you know the boxing belts, the WBO, IBF, WBC, WBA, they're all people just trying to get money. I don't care about them belts. When I've got them on my mantelpiece, what are they worth? £5. I'm not interested in somebody's belt and if I'm eligible to fight for it or not. I really couldn't give a hoot about a leather belt on the sideboard. That leather belt's not going to help me. It's not going to do nothing for me. I'm not interested if I win 20 or I win 1. I don't care about them belts. You know, fighters aren't made by a belt or an organisation. Fighters make them organisations. The IBF wasn't a noted belt until Larry Holmes made 19 title defences with it and turned it into a household name. You know, these organisations, and people go on about this world champion status, but when you know the insides and outs of boxing like I do, then it really means nothing. Boxing belts don't mean anything. It's the quality of the fight. A world championship belt doesn't mean nothing. You know, there's people out there who's bigger than belts, and there's levels. It's like when you're just starting off, you want to win a central area title, that's your world title. Then you get to the British title level, and that becomes like your world title. You get past that, and then it's like a world title is your ambition. You get past that, and then it's just big fights that no belts are involved. And you know, when you get to that level in your career, then that's what it's all about, really. You know, I see the situation with Froch and Groves. Groves has been mandated to fight him for the IBF. But you know, Froch is way above that fight. Froch should vacate that belt, in my opinion, and take another fight, Andre Ward, or someone who's bigger, you know, who's just going to generate more money and more attention for Froch, rather than coming back down, really, to a fight with Groves. I think he's past that level. I think he's made like a legendary status in Britain as far as it goes. And I know Froch has had some bad things to say about me, and he thinks everybody could beat me and whatever, but you know, I think Froch, to be honest, is one of Britain's greatest ever fighters.
Wow, okay. Well, on that note, I'm going to hand you over to Paul, which I'm sure you have some comments on that to make.
One of the questions I wanted to ask is, Adam's mentioned the banter, we'll call it, between you and Lennox. I've read today that Tony Thompson has been less than polite about you, shall we say, Tyson. Do you think that's him trying to build up a bit of interest in the David Price fight because it's gone unnoticed?
Yeah, I think they're trying to build some. It's a bad time for the Price-Thompson fight because you've got the Fury-Hay situation going on at the same time, and it's a 10 times bigger fight. So people, obviously, they'll turn up and they'll watch the fight, as I will myself. I'll watch the fight, but more people are interested in what's going to happen with the fight in with me and David Hay rather than that fight. So I think they're all trying to build up a bit of their thing. He called me a few names or whatever. But, you know, they've got to build interest in fighters and fights, so I don't blame them at all. And Tony Thompson can call me whatever he likes, sticks and stones, isn't it? Unless he's in front of me, punching me in the face, then I don't really care. And same with Lennox Lewis or David Price. My whole opinion on life has changed. People can call me what they want, I don't care. It's all sticks and stones. It doesn't really interest me. As of yesterday, have stopped with all the rubbish just going on, really, you know. Yeah, I don't think you need to be that loudmouth person anymore, that person who talks a good fight and goes in there and fights. You know, if people are interested in me, they're going to like me or not like me anyway. You know, I can create such a character that people, everyone wants to hate me, and people want to watch me just to get knocked out, but I'm not really interested in that anymore. I'm just going to get in there and fight, and that's it. I do a lot of talking, but, you know, I'm going to see if I can calm it all down, but my talking and my calling people names and calling people out has got me the David Haye fight. So in one way it works, and in other ways it doesn't, because probably the most hated fighter in Britain, and one of them in the world, probably. But like your man said there before, it's Marmite, isn't it? You either love me or hate me, but 85% of them hate me. So, you know, there's got to be a villain somewhere, and that's where I play the role good. But I'd like to try and change that outlook on people's opinions. And maybe when I beat David Haye, then they might say it was a fluke, or David Haye was not really a good boxer. But as of yet, I'm still hearing he's going to knock me out and whatever. But, you know, I usually hear that before fights, and then after the fight, it was like, oh, he was they make excuses for the opponent that was beaten. So I hope he can give me some good credibility. Not that I'm interested in credibility, because, quite frankly, I couldn't care what people think about me at all, because, you know, they're not going to pay my bills. They're not going to look after my family, you know. Boxing's a business to me, nothing more, nothing less. And as I said to Adam, boxing belts and things don't mean anything to me. Yeah. I'm not interested in all the world titles God's ever created being undisputed. I used to think, oh, it was all about winning titles and this, but what's a title when it's at home? Nothing. I don't think of it as being anything. I'm not interested in titles. I really ain't. If big fights can be made, fights that people want to see, then why should a title let that fight down or make it or break it, you know? There's some big fights that could happen that don't need titles. Me and David Haye don't need a title. Me and David Price don't need a title. There's some big fights, and hopefully after I beat David Haye and David Price, hopefully can beat Tony Thompson, then I'd like to get that fight on with me and David Price, because it's another fight people want to see, and it's another fight that doesn't need a title. And I don't care what other people want to say, pushing me into positions to fight such and a body and such and a body. I'm only going to fight the fights that's good for me and not good for what everybody else wants.
Yeah.
I think on that note about the David Price fight, it's a fight that it doesn't matter what happens in the Haye fight, that fight's always there, isn't it? And the same with Tony Thompson. If Tony Thompson wins again, it's still always an option for you no matter what, because there's a load of interest in it.
Yeah, it's a good fight for both parties, you know. I was really disappointed when Price got beat by Thompson, because after a rivalry that's lasted a long time from the amateur days into the professional days, it was really simmering up, and everybody believed that he could beat me, and it was really getting big. And for Tony Thompson to just come and spoil it all, and really he's a finished fighter. He's at the end of his career. He's got nothing to gain, you know. It really just put the nail in the coffin a bit. But hopefully, like he says, it's redemption time, and I pray for him that he can beat Tony Thompson and build that big rivalry back up, because people will start believing in him again if he can beat Thompson.
Just two questions very quickly. Sorry to jump in across your call. About David Price there. Hopefully we've got him on the podcast next week. So firstly, have you got a question for him? And I'll give you time to think about that one. And while you do, the punch that knocked him out last time, it gave him a perforated eardrum. It was a bit of a strange punch. Have you ever experienced anything like that yourself? In sparring?
To be honest, I haven't ever experienced anything like it. But, you know, obviously the guy was hurt, so I don't know about eardrums or whatever it was. Everybody loves a winner. When David Price was knocking everybody out, he was the best thing for sliced bread. But when he got knocked out, there was that many jokes from everybody about his glass ear and everything. You know, people always jump off the bandwagon, and it's not fair. I haven't got anything bad to say about David Price, nothing at all. He's probably a nice fella, nice family man and all that, and he's trying his best to make it in life and do well and provide for his family. So I want to wish him all the luck in the world for the Tony Thompson fight, and I hope he can pull it off with all my heart, I really do. For the perforated eardrum thing, well, if the man said he had a perforated eardrum when it went down, then I've got no reason to not believe the guy. Mm. But as for myself, I've never had a perforated eardrum, so I don't know what it's like. But looking at, at what happened to David, obviously it's a fatal thing to get one.
Sure. Paul, sorry, I jumped across you there, mate.
No, I've just got sort of one more question for Tyson. Obviously, we spoke to Peter previously after the Cunningham fight, and he said that he wasn't very happy, he didn't feel you boxed to a plan. And I think that was maybe evident in the performance. It wasn't the usual. You know, you look at Kevin Johnson compared to that fight. Against Hay, you are going to have to box to a plan, because if he does land, he has proven he can knock people out. How dangerous, realistically, is David Hay to you? I mean, that big right hand he's got. Is it something you're working on or you've spoke to Peter about?
To be honest, I'm going to tell you the truth. David Hay is very dangerous with both hands. He's not just a right-hand puncher, he's a good left-hook puncher as well. And he throws punches in bunches, so he'll throw the 1-2 in the left-hook and leap in with it. And people with leaky defences tend to get knocked out by fighters like David Hay. And everybody knows I've got a leaky defence, and I get caught with overhand rights, and I go down. I'm vulnerable to the overhand right, which is okay. That's no problem. But as for people saying my performance against Cunningham wasn't all that, well, they're not in the ring and they're not fighting. I've done the best I could against Steve Cunningham, and that was the best that I could have done. Maybe I could have boxed to a game plan, but I thought at the time when I was in there, and I was in there alone, that was the only thing that I could do at the time. Just trying to catch Steve Cunningham was for me to try and catch a conger eel in water. That's what it was like. It was horrible in there, but I just had to grit it down. I'm bullying, really, and that's what I do best. You know, every time I've boxed and went to box, there's only one time I've ever boxed and it went well till game plan, was against Kevin Johnson. And if I would have made many mistakes, Kevin Johnson would have made me pay. But every other time I've tried to do it, I always get caught with something stupid. And, you know, this time I ain't going to allow that to happen. You know, I'm 6'9", Hay 6'3", I'm 18 stone odd, David Hay 15 stone odd, you know. I'm 24, he's 32. You know, I really fancy this fight. I really fancy knocking him out. You know, I don't want to box around because he's got faster hands than me, he's got better movement than me, and he's got more power than me. So how am I going to outbox somebody like that? He's a cruiserweight coming up to heavyweight, so obviously he's fast. He's got a good work rate. So I can't, it's not possible for me to outbox him because, like I said, I'm 6'9" and 18 and a half stone. So for me to try and outbox or outmove somebody 15 stone is quite stupid, really. And I've not got the boxing skill of Vladimir Klitschko to try and keep him off and be in a boring fight, because maybe I could do that, but I haven't got the patience for it. It's either him or me. Mm-hmm. It's either I'm going to knock him out or he's going to knock me out. And that's the way I see it. And the way I see this fight is probably a 60-40 in David Hay's favour, because, like I say, he's got more speed and more power. And if I come out all attack, which I'm going to, then he's got a good chance of landing before me. But you know what it is? I'm going to go down swinging. And I swear, yeah, this is not going to be no walk in the park, because, like I say, 6'9", 18 stone, fit as a fiddle. And I'm going to come out. And Peter's had this, he's had this discussion with me 4 or 5 times now. Let's work to a nice boxing game plan. But you know what? Like I said to Peter, it's my life and my decision. And this is how I want to box. So Peter said, right, I can only get you fit and strong and prepare you for a war. And that's what I'm going to do. And I hope David A. Well, I know David A. probably won't come for a war, but I'm going to make it a war while it lasts. And if I catch David A., it's curtains. And if he catches me, it's curtains also. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he might be faster. People might say he's going to knock me out, but we'll see on the night. It's all on the night. And if I get in there and get into him and use my heart and determination against him, then I don't see why not I can't catch him always, because, you know, he's been knocked out before by Carl Thompson. He's been beat by Klitschko, so he knows what it's like to lose. So, you know, and I don't. I've never tasted defeat, and I don't want to. So there you have it. I've been totally honest with you.
No, that's good. On that note, we asked some of your Twitter followers to send in some questions, and I've got two that I wanted to read out, and one of them was to do with that. This is from Dan Kelman. He said, my question to Tyson is, what round is he going to KO David in, so I can go to the bookies and become a rich?
Well, the answer to that, Daniel, would be as soon as I connect on him, because as soon as I get him going a little bit, I'm just going to unleash barrages of shots. Like I said, this is going to be a 4 or 5 round fight, because if I haven't got him out of there within 5 rounds, I'm gone myself, because I'm going to exhaust that much energy and explosion on him. Then it's going to, that's it. I'm going to have it big time or have it nothing, because I'm the type of fighter I'd rather lose, get knocked spark out, than lose on points. So it's, I don't want a boxing match at all. I'm not interested in boxing. I said what I was going to do with Cunningham. I was going to go out there and knock him spark out, and I went out there and knocked him spark out. So hopefully I can do the same with David A. And I don't think David A is as tough as Steve Cunningham or as good as mover. So if I can pin him down and knock him out and wear him down, then I can wear David A down and knock him out.
Just on that note, the final question from your Twitter followers that came in, that I want to ask, was from Andre. And he just, you mentioned Cunningham there, and obviously you fought Johnson, and we talked about Tony Thompson, but who do you think the top three American heavyweight prospects are at the moment?
At the moment, there's quite a lot of American undefeated prospects. But prospects, or... But you mean undefeated prospects, or people who's like good...
Just three, the top three American heavyweights, and would you fancy fighting any of them?
Well, I think the top three American heavyweights would probably be Kevin Johnson, Steve Cunningham. So I've already beat them two. I'm one of the up-and-coming guys, probably Brian Jennings. You know, as it goes with undefeated heavyweights, I think... Brian Jennings is good, Deontay Wilder, Joe Hanks, Amir Mansouri. There's quite a few undefeated guys who's all looking good and all looking strong and powerful. And hopefully there can be some big fights in the future, providing they get past David A, you know. The British and American thing's always been a big rivalry in heavyweights. And hopefully we can reinstate that. You know, you've got me and David Price and Derek Chisora and David A. And there's a few other guys coming up behind us. So we've got a good, strong pack of heavyweights, really. And I'm sure that we should set up a USAV like the British boxers, because I think we'd have a good, strong team.
Yeah, absolutely. And get Huey on there as well. Huey getting stuck into it.
Yeah, Huey is coming up 6-0, so he's not too far behind us, really. Another couple of years and he's there.
I take it he'll be on the undercard?
Huey can tell you himself, because he's sat right next to me listening to you. Yeah.
Evening, Huey.
Hello.
Evening, Huey. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. How are you?
That's a nice surprise getting you back on the podcast so soon after the last time. Yeah. Congratulations on your last few wins again. And, yeah, hopefully we'll see you on the undercard of the Hay fight when it happens.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, you'll definitely see me on the undercard if it happens. It'll be a very good night of boxing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I should say war.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's something to look forward to. Well, unless Paul's got any further questions, I think that's about it for this evening. Is it, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pleasure to talk to Tyson again.
Yep, so I don't know if it's Tyson or Huey we've got on the line at the moment, but Tyson, Huey?
Yeah, do you want Tyson online as well?
Yeah, if he's there, yeah. Just to say thank you.
Yeah. Good night. Hello?
Hi, Tyson. Yeah, we just wanted to say thanks for your time tonight, and it's been a pleasure having you back on. And it's, although it's been a bit strange having a more subdued, melancholic Tyson on the line, it's, as always, it's been a pleasure and really, really insightful. So thanks for your time tonight. And I think Paul will echo those sentiments.
Yeah, as I said, it's been a pleasure to talk to.
Just one final question.
No problem, and I hope. Go on.
I was just saying, one final question which just jumped to me there. We should have asked this earlier on. I know the contract's still not signed and all those kind of things, and you haven't got involved in the detail. But one of the questions that does keep coming up is about where this fight will be able to be seen. Has there been any discussions about Channel 5, pay-per-view, anything like that?
I think it's definitely a pay-per-view fight, but we don't know where it's going to go. There's quite a few pay-per-view stations, in the UK, so you know, your guess is as good as mine, but... You've got Box Nation, Sky Box Office, Premier Sports, Prime Time. There's quite a few pay-per-view stations, so it's more likely to be on one of those, really, than rather than a national television.
But that's not holding the fight up. That's not one of the things, I take it.
What's that?
That's not one of the things that's holding it up, I take it.
No, definitely. I think the TV channels will be jumping up and down to get this fight on, sure. Whichever one it is. Just hopefully it can get sorted and get the fight on.
Well, great. Well, thanks for your time again tonight. And what we'll do is we'll let you get back to your own time this evening. And hopefully we'll get you on just before the fight again, just to let us know how the training camp's going. But for the time being, thanks for joining us.
Okay, no problem. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Tyson.
Bye-bye.
last week I was looking at BBC Sports Personality of the Year odds. Tyson Fury was 33-1 to win it. He's now 7-1. I don't know if you think he's got any chance of winning it.
I don't. I think because the PC Brigade would come out and talk about some of the homophobic stuff that he used to spout and those kind of things, which will shoot him down. I'd love to see him win it. I would. Yeah. Because there's very few personalities in sports these days. It usually goes to people who are winners as opposed to actual personalities. You know, for example, I know you're an F1 fan. I'm sorry, there's only two sports that I can't stand, and that's one of them. But, you know, Lewis Hamilton, I think, has won it. But is he really a personality? You know,
he's one of them, isn't he? Like, sort of him and Joshua are like the two big sort of stars. I'm kind of with you. He is a bit bland at times.
You'd much rather someone like Tyson Fury win it, because you would know his speech would be great. He'd most probably swear and say something controversial. But I think deep down he's a nice guy, you know. And if he does give the money to the homeless, which I honestly think he will, I think that sums him up. You know, when he was at Euros after he won the fight, you know, didn't he buy like 200 Jaeger bombs for the crowd?
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know. And it's the kind of stupid thing he would do. That's what you want from your sporting heroes. You know, you don't want someone who lives, you know, drives a Bentley and, you know, has a model girlfriend and things like this. They're boring. You know, you want someone who's going to add a bit of excitement, and Fury's that guy for me. But
it depends, anyway. Doesn't it? If he makes the top 10 in it that's decided by the panel, I think the public will vote for him. It's just, for me, that's the question. If he makes the top 10, I think he stands a very good chance. It's just whether he makes that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think there's no way you can vote for him beforehand.
No, you can't. But what I'm saying is I think the panel might exclude him and not pick him. But if he does get picked by the panel when he's in that group, then I can see a load of public. I can see through social media and that I can see a load of people voting for him.
Well, if he gets into that top 10, then we'll try our best to promote him as well.
Yeah, I'm sure we can depend on our support. Maybe if we tag him in enough tweets, we might get another interview with him. We'll have to see. All right. Well, I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do it at V2 Sport Network, and also you can follow Adam at V2 Adam IL. I'll put the links in the description. Thanks for listening, and good night.